Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Meet the Author on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host. And today, my guest is Jeffrey Schlamann. Jeff is a former auditor and California CPA, currently working as a finance executive in the United Kingdom. And his book is titled Subprime Factor, and it was inspired by the current credit crisis and fallout from the burst of the housing market bubble. And Jeff is a native of Auburn, California, residing currently in England with his wife, Stacy, and their two children. Jeff, welcome to Meet the Author.
Denny, thank you very much, and thanks a lot for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
And I asked you a couple of minutes ago, but for the benefit of our listeners who may be interested in the weather in England, would you care to share that with us?
Well, I'm not sure where you are. You're in California?
I'm in Vegas.
You're in Vegas. Well, I'm sure it's much nicer there. It's about 36 degrees is what my thermometer says outside right now. But it's clear, not raining, so that's okay.
So that's good, huh? Okay, and we're going to be talking with Jeff about his book and his background. And if anybody has a question for Jeff or a comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. So, Jeff, subprime factor is obviously timely. Certainly, we're in the throes of this now being referred to as a depression, and the collapse of the housing market certainly was one of the key elements in the current situation. And I've read your book, and a very entertaining read, Subprime Factor. And how much research did you have to do? I mean, you had a background or have a background in accounting and auditing and so forth. How much research did you have to do to write that book?
It's an interesting question, and I've had my members of my family and friends ask me that. And originally I told them, I didn't do any research. You know, I kept up with current events and blah, blah, blah. But really, watching the housing bubble go up, and I had moved from California to Alabama and then to England, and knowing that I was mobile, I've always been a renter, sort of watching the housing market. And really, it was quite a bit of research I did. You know, I was watching housing markets all over the country, and it just came to the point where it got so out of whack, where I was a well-paid executive, and I thought I could barely afford, on normal borrowing terms, you know, a tiny, tiny house in California, and that's really what prompted me to write the book.
Now, so you then maybe suspected there was problems ahead. I mean, you thought that the way things were going, maybe something was going to collapse eventually.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the country's had credit bubbles throughout its past. You know, starting with our revolution. You know, from England, and we've had currency crises, and it's all seemed to stem from these credit bubbles where we're borrowing more than we can spend. And I try to get some of the important, more current events into this book in a fictional and hopefully interesting way.
Some of the characters, did you base your characters on people you've known at some point in time in your life, or did you just make them up out of whole cloth?
Well, for the most part, I say I made them all up. Most of the characters are based on me, you know, with a hybrid cross of people that I've known well over the years.
And did you enjoy writing the book?
I really enjoyed writing it. And Denny, I've learned a lot about you in the last couple of weeks, so you probably, well, maybe not, felt the same thing. But it was really fun up until the point where I had to end the book. And when I had to get to the ending and I had a timeline, I didn't enjoy it so much, and then it turned into a high pressure thing. But yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was good.
Now, you know what I find, and I'll see if you shared my feelings. I've now gotten into some nonfiction work, but I have 10 books out total, 7 are fiction. And other than pressure near the end, pressure to end the story, maybe when you weren't really ready, but you're required to do so, I found that the fiction was great and enjoyable because you could, to some degree, wing it. You could, you know, create your own characters, give them their own personalities and so forth, where in nonfiction, obviously you had to be more accurate. You were talking about real people and so forth. And I think from a fun standpoint, fiction is a ball to write. Enjoyable, except like you say, when you run into a deadline of some sort that puts extra pressure on you. But being in control, when you're a fiction writer, I think you're kind of in control of the story, and you can, you know, put the clues in as you want and build the characters you want, give them the personalities you want. And it's almost like having your own private world you're in. Did you have that feeling and kind of enjoy that ability to create the scenarios and create the characters and mold them the way you wanted them?
Oh, definitely. Boy, I mean, fiction would be so much easier. To me, it was so much easier than writing nonfiction. I did think of both. With fiction, you're right. I mean, you can get your point across in a very simple way, and you can back up the evidence with whatever you can create in your mind.
Right.
My book, and from what I can tell about yours, was the same way, is that, you know, you want a very credible argument because you're trying to make a real point. But writing fiction, it allows you to do that, and I think it allows you to appeal to a much broader audience also. You know, people that aren't going to, they don't care about the technicalities, and they don't care about the details, and, you know, they want to know what's the point, and it allows you to back up the point with maybe fictional stories.
I'm sure I don't want to give too much away. We'd like to obviously have people read your book, so I don't want to get into too much detail, but one of your characters is an FBI agent who runs afoul of his supervisor and has some job-related difficulties. Did you know such a person, or was that?
I knew his brother. Yes,
okay.
So I knew his brother well, and I heard lots of stories, and I think we communicated with a medium. But no, I didn't know the actual individual, but many, many parts of that character were based on an actual person, yes.
Okay, so you had a real real person to pattern that character after.
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
That's great. I find it, and sometimes I don't even intentionally, or don't knowingly do a character based on someone I've known or heard about, you know, maybe through a friend or something, and all of a sudden I'll say, wait a minute. I've heard this before, and I'll realize that I'm writing, giving somebody the personality of a person that I've actually met at some point in my life, or
sure.
Or have heard about it through a friend or relative. So it's quite a thing. Now, what do you see in the future? I'm going to ask you to put on your crystal ball hat here. As far as getting out of this thing, do you see a recovery? I'm talking about the housing market. Let's limit it to that. Do you see a rebound there? What do you think is going to happen?
It'll definitely rebound. Everything's cyclical. The reason we're in this mess is a debt bubble. What's going to happen, or the way I see it, and I write for various, you know, news mediums, is that eventually, and I think it's going to be a couple years out, we're going to see very high inflation as the government just cranks that money supply everywhere it can.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to inflate the money supply, so interest rates, wages, everything's going to go up. And these people with fixed mortgages, you know, if you fixed your mortgage at 5%, well, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be fixed, and eventually it will inflate the debt away. Unfortunately, what that means for everything else other than the house you bought is that everything else is going to be more expensive, and probably our standard of living is going to be quite a bit lower than it has been in the last decade.
Do you foresee then, talking about cyclical, that then X number of years from now we'll go through the same thing again, there'll be an inflated value of these homes and so forth, and we'll end up in the same boat?
I think it, unless there's a major change in the political and socioeconomic mindset, it will change. I mean, it will stay the same. I mean, we need a change. And there's people out there, mainstream people you've heard that, I mean, a lot of your listeners probably think are crazy, like Ron Paul, and a lot of the more libertarian thinkers. It's called the Austrian School of Economics, and that one, or Orthodox Economics, or the Chicago School. And it is, everything's bubbles. It's bubbles as long as we have what we call a fractional reserve lending system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've read the book, you know one of the major themes is that, you know, it talks about how the fractional reserve banking system works. Money is created today by the banks, by lending, and part of that money creation is creating inflation also, which is unfortunately a hidden tax on the public.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the housing thing first broke, you know, the news of what was going on, there was a lot of coverage about the old who knew what when type stuff, and various hearings, oversight hearings that Congress had, and where issues were raised and ignored and so forth. Do you think there's any chance that we've learned a lesson from that, and maybe that they'll be a little better on oversight in the future and act ahead of time, or do you think we're bound to repeat the same mistakes?
Boy, I hope so. I hope we learned. But the truth is, when everything's going good, you know, everybody wants things to continue to be good, and they vote in that, you know, what's going to keep the money easy, what's going to keep it there. And when times turn bad, I mean, can you imagine if Congress and the White House and everybody just sat by while this whole thing happened and said, okay, let's let the economy take its natural course. Let's let everybody suffer. We're going to suffer really horribly for the next 10 years, but then we can grow again. It wouldn't happen. They'd be voted out of power. And unfortunately, that is what's happening. And it didn't matter if it was Obama or McCain or Republican or Democrat. They were going to crank the money supply harder. And unfortunately, what I see is that's going to just let this thing drag out for years and years and years.
And that's unfortunate. You know, you mentioned about when things are going good, and I'm going to get off subject a tad here, but still economic related, gas prices. Now, the public here in the U.S. was up in arms when we hit $4, $4.50 a gallon.
Sure.
And I was one of them. I mean,
I wasn't
happy either. Now, the prices came down substantially. And for example, here in Vegas, at one point, I think the lowest I paid was like $1.62, and that was maybe a month ago or 3 weeks ago. But now it's creeping back up again. I haven't, and it's right around $2 now. And I haven't heard much in the way of complaints, or it hasn't been highly publicized, because I think that once we got off the $4.50 or the $4, that $2 seems so reasonable that, you know, that's kind of acceptable. And I'm not sure. I heard that the oil had dropped to $33, $36 a barrel, and so I'm not really understanding why the gas prices are going back up. But do you think people get complacent? You know, I mean, they got off the $4.50 or $4 a gas, and now the $2, they say, hey, never mind, drill here and all that kind of stuff that was going on a few months ago. And it's almost like, hey, this is okay.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think people are confused, and everybody's confused. Financial experts are confused. They've all got it wrong. Everybody's got it wrong. And you look at what happened with oil prices. Well, oil shot up to $147 a barrel, and then dropped down to $32 a barrel 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's confusing. What was happening there was You know, you saw these hedge funds, and a lot of this investment money was moving from real estate and stock, the stock market, into whatever else they could, which was commodities. So they were buying up this other market, and they were, you know, they realized we're going to a recession, so that market went away. What you're seeing is bubble after bubble forming until there's no bubbles left because there can't be one. You know, the population's not growing. The gross domestic product's not growing. Exports aren't growing. And, I mean, there's nothing there to grow. But back to your original point, yeah, I think people saw that. And, yeah, great. Well, that's an improvement. But we were at $2, you know, 18 months ago also. So it's, you know, it's not a huge deal.
Yeah.
But it's a psychological effect. Sure.
Doesn't it illustrate, though, do you think how unstable and at the mercy we are of what happens in the Middle East and blah, blah, blah? Because I'm sure if we get back to that $4 range, there'll be an outcry again. They'll be hauling all these oil executives up before congressional committees and, you know, the same routine that we go through each time there's a drastic increase in the price of gasoline. Nothing ever seems to happen, but I guess maybe for political cover, the politicians all want to indicate that they're trying to do something. Then we'll get back to the demands for developing our own domestic energy sources and so forth. And then when the gas drops back to $2 again, that'll all be forgotten until the next spike.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your thesis. And when I wrote my book, Subprime Factor, I thought that, okay, we're screwed as far as Europe and the USA because we don't have the big oil supply. Yeah, we've got Texas and the UK has got, you know, the North Sea, but we're in trouble. And the countries that are going to take over are going to be Russia, the Middle East. But what you don't think about is when you have a spike that high as $147 a barrel, everybody taps everything. So what do? We've got, you know, they're turning corn into ethanol. They're plowing into the oil sands up in Canada. All these new sources of oil are being tapped, and oil plummeted, and I think it's going to be a permanent plummet. I don't see it coming up for many, 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 many years.
Well, that would. How about the gas prices? Would they then follow suit? Because they seem to be. I'm not really sure what the justification is now with apparently falling oil prices and rising gas prices. That seems out of whack to me.
Well, gas it trails oil by a few weeks, but for the most part, it's the same. And yeah, we saw oil go from $147 down to $30. We saw gas go from $4.50 down to, you know, $2. It's come up a little bit. Long term, that plus all of the technology improvements, I think oil will stay low. I think commodities for the most part will stay low. The problem is that these. All of the governments are cranking out the money now trying to stop inflation.
Right.
And so you're going to see, I mean, that's what's going to drive things upwards, but it's all going to be driven upwards. So it's going to be oil, it's going to be corn, it's going to be steel, it's going to be gold. Everything's going to be driven up that way, and it's not going to be buy one currency, sell the other. It's going to be let's take some hard assets, and I think that's going to be the recovery of real estate also.
Lest I forget, Jeff, before we move out, I want to get into some writing-related questions, general writing questions with you, but before we do that, would you be willing to give out any contact information or website information about where people can get more info about you and or your book or purchase the book?
Well, of course, I'd love to. Yeah, my my website is www.subprimefactor.com. You can reach me at Jeff@subprimefactor.com, and boy, just hope you buy the book. And then, again, Danny, I really appreciate you having me on your show.
Well, you're welcome. It's fun talking with you and very informative. Now, I'd like to talk maybe about some general writing, the business of writing. And is your experience, do you think that writing the manuscript is obviously very important, having a quality manuscript and so forth. But my opinion is there's much more to the business of writing than just the manuscript. No matter how good the manuscript is, if you don't get published, obviously nobody's going to read it. And if you get published and don't promote and market the book, nobody's going to read it. Do you agree with me on that?
Oh, I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree. It's a horrible, horrible market for writers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the quotes I was given was, you know, one book out of 10,000 is published. Some horrible number. It's a tough market.
And would you say, I know personally people or met people and talked with people who were, right, they enjoyed writing and they had a passion for writing, but they found out once they had their manuscript and once they got published, and now, you know, between the so-called traditional publishers and self-publishing options, most people can get the book out there by one method or other. But regardless how it goes with traditional or self-publishing, and unless you have some huge name, you know, if George W. wants to write a book about his presidency or something, he's got the name, and I'm sure
right.
his publisher would have him on a tour or something. But for most of us average Joes, even if we're with a traditional publisher, in this day and age, they're not going to send you on a nationwide or worldwide book tour, all expenses paid. It's still up to the author to get out there and hustle and get news about their book and promote the book. And I've seen people who really had a problem with that. They weren't prepared. They were under the misimpression that once their manuscript was accepted and the book was in print, their job was kind of over, that the publishers, publicity people or marketing people and so forth would handle it from there, and that at the most they could kind of sit back in their easy chair and wait for the publicist to call and say, hey, can you do a signing, you know, next Friday and blah, blah, blah. And the people either were uncomfortable with marketing, maybe they weren't good at speaking in public or afraid to speak in public to do events and so forth. And they kind of fell flat at the marketing stage. Have you encountered any people like that, or do you think I'm just misreading it, or do you think that's actually a problem for some writers?
Oh boy, no, I agree with you completely. I mean, it is a horrible, horrible market for writers, and I say that because there's so many writers and there's so few publishers. I mean, I think if you make minimum wage on your writing, you've done a good job. To get published, I mean, God, I sent my book to I don't even know how many how many agents. I mean, it is a difficult, difficult process. And the only path I can see is to either become an expert in a field without a lot of experts, or to just hang in there and be the best at what you do. And unfortunately, that's it. I mean, but you can see it from the point of the publishers. There's 10,000 authors publishing the number of books people will buy to make a profit, you know, 100 books. You know, what are you going to do? You're picking. You can pick and choose.
Yeah, it's I guess you call it a publisher's market, right? I mean, they're in the
yeah.
seat, and they have ample business opportunities for everybody making submissions.
And with the internet and all these other free mediums of communicating, you know, it makes it even harder and harder and harder. It is, but people that are passionate about it and people that are good, I mean, I really hope they and can encourage them to just keep trying and keep doing it. And who cares? You know, earn another salary on the side. Go do something different. It doesn't matter if you're slinging coffees at Starbucks or you know, pushing the plow. Keep doing it, because if you are the best, you will rise to the top eventually.
So, like the old saying, don't quit your day job until you find out where you're going here with it.
Well, yeah, I don't know your story, but yeah, I've still not quit my day job.
I remember back years ago, for a while, I sold insurance, and there was a saying at the time there's no one with endurance like a man who sells insurance. And I think that the saying could very well apply to authors who end up succeeding, because they have to have the endurance and the stamina to hang in there, and the perseverance to get through the rejections. And I know some people tell me that they send out between agents and publishers all these queries, and the rejection slips, some of them have drawers full of rejection slips, and kind of like badges of honor. I mean, you know, that but they keep plugging away, and maybe they'll reword the query or what have you, and go back for a second round, and they just keep at it. And some of them eventually get a contract and get published and so on and so forth. So, but if you're not a little bit thick-skinned, I think, and can take some criticism, because some of these rejections are not tactfully worded, in my opinion. There are some people out there who will don't do much for your morale the way they reject.
Oh.
Others are very good. You know, they'll say, geez, it's really a good work and blah, 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 but we just did something in that genre and, you know, we're not ready to do another one right at this point. And they let you down gently.
Yeah,
some are a little bit drastic.
It's terrible. I mean, I've got an ego like everybody else, but man, writing a book was the most bruised it's been. I mean, it is tough, and it hurts.
Yeah.
You know, you're rejected by people. Yeah, like I said, if you have a big ego, it even hurts more. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, marketing techniques. Now, I was not a marketer to begin with or a promoter. I was terrified to talk in public. And now I'm getting so I enjoy it.
Good.
Quick turnaround, and thank God, because I've got to do that, you know, because I don't have a publicist or whatever. I do have things myself, and I'm getting so I enjoy it, which is good for me. But I think the people have each of us are individuals. We have strengths and weaknesses. And for example, one method of marketing that a person I know told me about works for her fine. It would not work for me. And that what she does is she goes to these malls and shopping centers, and she has flyers, and she puts them under the windshield wipers with her website, you know,
good for her.
Synopsis of the book. And she'll also, as people are entering or leaving, if she's in that area of the parking lot, she will actually approach them and start a conversation. Now, I know how I react when I'm entering or leaving a shopping center or stores. I'm very put off, because usually they're panhandlers when they start looking.
Yeah.
They're looking, you know, can I have a quarter for the bus or something? But she sells quite a few, you know, she got a trunk full of books, and she sells quite a few books that way. Now, that wouldn't work for me personally. It wouldn't fit my personality, and I think you have to be comfortable doing whatever it is you're going to do for marketing. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely, definitely. But I'd buy 10 books from her just because I know how hard it is, like you do. But normally, I would run away.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you my wallet.
So you'd make a sympathy purchase, right?
Well.
So. And what do you think? Do you belong to any writers' groups?
No, I don't yet.
Did you ever think about joining one? Is that anything?
I have thought about it, sure.
Okay. Because that's another area, at least in my experience, that you can find some people who can give you some guidance. A lot of times there are people with more experience, and they can lend you a hand or give you some information or possibly prevent you from making some mistakes, you know, that they've made.
Yeah.
Not you. I'm not talking about you first, but a new writer.
Right.
Give some guidance. So I think that's a worthwhile thing, too. But there are a lot of things. You know, with the Internet today and the research you can do, it's really not much of an excuse to be uninformed. Do you think I'm right there? I mean,
yeah.
I think the capability is there for people to study the business of writing and kind of know what they're getting into and how to proceed.
Sure, it's just a highly competitive field. And I think writing can often be used as a link into other jobs too, or in a link into other careers. I mean,
sure.
They should market themselves that way also, not as being John Grisham or you know, some high profile author, but also just what else they can do.
Absolutely. Jeff, I just got my notification here. We're out of time already. I don't know where the half hour went to. I want to thank you very much for being on with me. And maybe later on, if you do another book or if there's some changes one way or other in the economic situation, I'd like to come back on and chat again.
Great. Thanks, Danny.
Okay. Thanks a million again. The book is Subprime Factor, and I read it. It's a good read, and it's a very timely subject matter. Jeff,
thank you
a million.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.